Okay, well, good morning. Good Thursday morning to you. We are still in the midst of coronavirus, and we are still hoping that we can study the Bible together, we can learn the Bible together, and we can move forwards. So we have been we've been looking through some of these laws of Moses here in the book of Exodus. We've been kind of moving a little. We started kind of moving slowly, and now we're hurrying up a little bit more, and we're looking through these texts, and we're hoping to see what lessons we can gain from these. So today we're going to finish up chapter 23. There are two sections, two pericopes here, and we're going to finish these up, and then we're going to be done here with the Law of Moses. We're going to move on simply because the Law of Moses is so big that it would take a real dedicated study to get through all of this material. But what I think we've seen, what I hope you've seen, first with the laws about the laws about servants, the laws about wives and concubines, the laws about personal responsibility with physical violence and with animals and with the way that we use our wealth. All of this is showing that we're responsible to each other for how we behave. Okay, so right now, let's go to chapter 23, and why don't you go ahead and read chapter 23, verses 10 through the end of the chapter, and we're going to try to finish up chapter 23 today. So go ahead and pause, and then when you are done, we are going to set the clock for 15 minutes, and we're going to be in and out of here in 15 minutes at the most, okay? Or at least I'm going to try to. All right, go ahead and pause, and then let's get through the text. So what we have here in the last two sections, the last two pericopes of chapter 23, first we have the laws about the Sabbaths and the feasts, and then we have this interesting word about the angel of the presence, which isn't really a law or an ordinance, although it deals with laws and ordinances, but it's talking about not only what's going to happen in the future, not only the laws that are happening all the time, but what's going to happen in the future. And that's a lot of what we see in the Sabbaths and the feasts. It's talking about what's going to happen in the future. So we see the Sabbath year. For 6 years, you're to sow your land and gather in its produce. In the seventh year, you must let it lie fallow and leave it alone so that the poor of your people may eat. And we see for 6 days you can do your work, but on the seventh day you must cease. You need to let your animals and your servants cease from their work as well. And so what is God saying? He's saying that not only is there a Sabbath every week, but there's a Sabbath of years. Every 6 years you take the seventh year off. Now, later we're going to learn about the year of Jubilee, which is going to be a like the Sabbath year. It's going to be a remission of debts, but it's going to be a reversion of property back to the ancestral owners, so that sold property will revert back to the original owners every 50 years. So every 7 years, debts are canceled. Every 50 years, property returns back. And this is significant because although this text here isn't talking about it, but if all debts are canceled every 7 years, think about that. If all debts are canceled every 7 years, it's gonna mean two things. One, it's going to mean that it's going to be really difficult to create generational poverty. The second thing is it's going to be rather difficult to create generational wealth. If you're a person who wants to gain wealth, if you want your money to make money, what do you need? You need things to invest in, right? If debt goes away every 7 years, that means that really you only want to invest in things at the beginning of the seven-year period, at the beginning of the 6 years, because you've only got 6 years to make money off of any kind of investment. This is difficult. If you're a person who's wise with your money, if you're a person who loves to invest, if you're a person who likes the ideas of investing in financials and banks, you would not like this, right? Like, you would not like this. God is not against people making money on interest or on business. By the way, if we get to this in the text, I could spend a day talking about that. God does not forbid interest. God forbids excessive interest against the poor. God does not forbid the taking of interest. God does not forbid businesses earning interest. Okay, God forbids excessive interest being taken from the poor. Okay, so what is God doing? If you look over and over and over again, the laws that God gives about the way that people are allowed to conduct business are things that actually deliberately hurt business. If America passed a law right now, I'm serious, think about this. If America passed a law right now that said that debts would only be good for 6 years, and after the end of every 6 years, that all debts would be canceled, the mortgage industry would look very different. The mortgage industry would look very differently, okay? It would not be the same. if every 7 years people who have sold themselves into slavery were released, although we don't have that today, but I mean that would be very different. If your only means of clearing debt is through service, then this could be very different. Now, are there options for abuse within the system? Absolutely. Absolutely. But if every 50 years property reverts back then to the initial owner, to the family owners, then the accrual of property is only temporary. What is God saying here? And again, I could talk all day on this, but what is God saying? He's telling them that the attempts to build wealth, to ever have increasingly wealth, to constantly add, as Jesus, as James talks about, adding field to field, farm to farm until all the land is full. If you're one of these people who wants to gain and gobble up all of the property and bring everything under some kind of, you know, personal monopoly or hegemony of the local economy, then you're doing it wrong, right? Like God's not against people gaining wealth, but God is against people trying to gain all wealth in a community. God deliberately is stopping that. He is deliberately preventing the rich from becoming as rich as they could be. Think about that. God, in his law, is deliberately preventing the rich from becoming as rich as they could be. So you want to ask me, you say, Luke, do you believe in capitalism? Sure, I believe in capitalism. Capitalism works. I also don't believe in unfettered capitalism. The Bible does not teach unfettered capitalism. The Bible teaches that you do have a moral and a legal and a financial responsibility to the poor. You say, well, Luke, I worked hard for my money. Sure you did. Sure you did. But you didn't work hard for your brains. You didn't work hard for the capacity to make wealth, which God gave you. God holds us all responsible. We are all responsible to one another. We are all responsible to one another. Now, am I advancing socialism? No, because socialism doesn't work. Socialism is stupid. But what I am saying is there is such a thing as compassionate capitalism. And if America doesn't find out what compassionate capitalism is, then guess what? We are on the fast road towards socialism. Anyways, I spent way too long on this. The point is, God prevents people from becoming as wealthy as they could be in his law. Why? Because they need to show responsibility. They need to show care towards the poor and the less fortunate. Okay? God says, pay attention to everything I've done. And then God commands that there are going to be certain feasts that they're going to take. These are burdensome, right? Like these are burdensome. Having to go every year to Jerusalem, that's a lot to ask of people. Before the automobile was invented, right? Like this is a big deal. Now, do I say burdensome in the sense that they were bad? No, they wouldn't be burdensome in the sense that they were bad. These could be times of great joy when the nation could come together, but they are time consuming. They are expensive, right? Like God demanded quite a bit from his people, right? This idea that God's demands were just, you know, cursory, that the law of Moses didn't require that much of people. That's completely false. The law of Moses required a lot from people. It required a great sum of their wealth. It required them giving up the opportunity to make wealth and build wealth. It required them to stop what they were doing at least three times a year and all gather in Jerusalem for a festival. Like these are big things. Like these are not little things. God is demanding big things of the people. Now, am I saying they're bad? No. Am I saying that God was making unjust demands on the people? No, I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is they are big demands. And if you're a person who hates God, these are onerous demands. If you're a person who loves God, these are awesome opportunities to get together and have a festival and praise the Lord for the gifts that they've been given. And God says, if you do these things, if you celebrate these feasts, I will pour out wealth upon you. I will pour out my wealth upon you. If you do the things that deliberately prevent you from getting as rich as you can, God will bless you with financial wealth. If you deliberately stop working three times a year and go and bring huge portions of your wealth and put it on a fire, I will pour out more blessings on you. God promises to bless people who do things that financially don't make any sense. God says, if you do these things that don't make any financial sense at all, I will bless you. You say that doesn't make any sense. No, it doesn't. It requires faith. You have to have faith in God. You have to believe that Yahweh, that the Lord, will actually be able to do the things that he says he's going to do. God says, if you obey me, if you deliberately prevent yourself from getting as rich as you can, if you cancel debts every 7 years, if you let property revert back every 50 years, if you stop working three times a year to go and celebrate and spend enormous amounts of your wealth 10% at least to the Levites, and then another couple percent to the priests, and then a whole bunch of what you brought to go to that festival. If you spend enormous amounts of your wealth every single year in these festivals, guess what? I will bless you even more. God says, I will bless you when you do things that don't make any sense because I've demanded them. I've demanded you to show faithfulness to me, and I will bless you if you do these things. Now, does this mean that we should go squander our wealth? Am I telling you, like, to go and you know, as Adrian Rogers said, you know, back in the day when people made their sacrifices, when they made their tithes to the Lord, they took it and put it in a big pile and burned it, and he said, we ain't gonna do that. You know, I'm not saying you should go and burn your wealth, but what I am saying is these are not natural things. If there is no economics book in the world that will tell you to go do these things. There is no Econ 101 class you can take that's going to tell you that the best way to gain wealth is to make no income at all every 7 years. There's no Econ book in the world that will tell you, yeah, deliberately give up, you know, what is 1/7, like 13%, 14% of your wealth every single week. Give up 14% of the opportunity to make wealth. No book is going to tell you to do that. No economist is going to tell you to do that. I'll tell you what, the government isn't going to stop taking taxes every 7 days. The government is not going to stop taking taxes every 7 years. The government is not going to mandate that property revert back to the original owner every 50 years. God says do these things. The government is not going to demand that everybody in the country go to one place and celebrate a festival where they use up, you know, anywhere from 1 to 10% of their wealth in one weekend. That doesn't make any sense. That's dumb. So we think. God says, do the thing that's dumb and see if I don't bless you. Trust me enough. Trust me enough to do something that doesn't make sense to you, and I will bless you. That's what God says. The question is, will they actually trust God enough? And will they be content with the blessings that they have, or will they be greedy? And as we see from the Bible, the people of Israel, God did bless them. God did bless them with wealth, and it wasn't enough. People wanted more. People always want more. People are always greedy. People, it doesn't matter how much God blesses somebody. Somebody always wants more. Unless they've learned contentment, which Paul says he had learned contentment. He knew how to abide, and he knew how to be abased, and he knew how to abound. Paul knew how to celebrate life when he was rich, and he knew how to celebrate life when he was poor. Paul knew how to have enough. Do we know how to have enough in America? Do we really? Do American Christians know how to have enough? How much money do you need in the bank before you feel secure? How much wealth do you need in your 401k before you feel secure? How much do you need? I'm asking you sincerely, how much wealth do you need for you to feel secure? Because I'll tell you what, it'll never be enough. It'll never be enough. I've been buying silver since I was a kid. Since I was 19 years old, I've been buying silver as a hedge against the dollar crashing, because I'm a person like that. I'm a worst case scenario person. So I've bought precious metals as a hedge against the dollar crashing. And you know what my fear is that all of that wealth that I've spent, guess what? It could be stolen tomorrow. Somebody could come and rob me. You know what? And then you say, well, I don't want to have physical wealth. I don't want to have, you know, physical bullion. So I'm going to invest in stocks. Guess what? The stock market can crash. It has crashed. It will crash. You can invest in the dollar. Guess what? The dollar could crash. There is no secure investment. You can say, well, I'll buy real estate. You could be kicked off your land. The government does it all the time. They kick people off their land. You can say, well, I'll store up a whole bunch of wealth. And if everything goes to hell, if the dollar crashes, if the nation struggles, then I'll have food and livestock and animals, and I'll go live off the grid. Guess what? People can come and take what you have when you live off the grid. Somebody could always take what you have. Trying to save up wealth in this world, trying to have enough to feel secure, you will never have enough to feel secure. You will never have enough to feel secure. God says you don't need enough to feel secure. You need to trust me that I will care for you. You need to obey me in financial issues and trust me that I will care for you, because that's what all these laws are. All of these laws are about trusting God. Trust God to do the thing that doesn't make sense financially, and he will bless you. Store up treasures in heaven. Don't store up treasures on earth. That's what Jesus tells us. Now, Jesus doesn't guarantee that if you spend your wealth on the church that you're going to get rich. God doesn't say that. Jesus doesn't say that. He does say that if you take your wealth and you use that to build his church, that you will store up treasure in heaven. Friends, where are you storing up treasure? Are you trying to get rich here in this world? It won't do you any good. It will not do you any good. There is no pocket in a shroud. Friends, storing up treasure here in this world. I'm not against having treasure in this world. I told you I buy gold and silver bullion. I believe in it. I believe that we should try to save wealth. I believe that we should try to save money. I believe that we should be responsible. I believe that we should have enough money that we will not be a burden to other people. Because guess what? The Bible commands us to save up enough money so that we won't be a burden to other people. But I also believe that trying to get rich in this world and not store up treasures in heaven is a foolish thing. You're only going to be in this world for 70, maybe a few more. You're going to be in heaven for eternity. Why don't you store up some treasure there? Why don't I do that? Instead of telling you what to do, why don't I do that? Anyways, we see the end of chapter 23 tells us something very similar, that God is going to send his angel ahead, that they're going to go and they're going to have to fight, and it's going to be a long-term fight. Look at verses 27 through 32. I will send my terror before you, and I will alarm the people you encounter, and I'll make all your enemies turn back to you. I will send hornets, and they'll drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, the Hittite, but I will not drive them out in a year, but it'll be little by little. God says, I don't want the wild animals to overthrow the land. I want you to take the land little by little so that you walk into homes that are taken care of. I want you to walk into property that's planted. I want you to take this land from the Canaanites little by little so that you walk into cultivated land. But it's going to happen slowly. And then in verse 32, you must make no covenant with them or with their gods. What's he saying? This process of you taking over Canaan is going to take a long time. And you're going to be tempted to take the easy way out, to stop fighting them and to just make a covenant with them, as Judges tells us, that they force them into forced labor, that you make slaves of the Canaanites instead of driving them out of the land. That's what they're going to be tempted to do. Why? Because it's easier to do that. It's easier to force the Canaanites to serve you than it is to continue to fight them and take the land from them over a long haul. But you got to trust God. God says, don't do this. Don't do this. Trust me when I tell you that if you will obey me, if you will not make a covenant with them, I will give you the whole land. Well, we find out, sadly, that's not what happened. What do we see in these last sections? It's all about trusting God. Trust God with your wealth. Trust God with your property. Trust God to know what's right for you. Don't just follow human wisdom. Lean not on your own understanding, but in all things, trust God. That's what these last sections are about, trust God. Do we really trust God? We need to. We need to. Anyways, we're gonna finish up. We're going to continue moving through tomorrow. We'll finish up the week tomorrow, and hopefully that these have been a blessing to you, and I look forward to continuing to study the Bible. Thank you. God bless. Bye.